Session number 17628, Mr. Joseph Clark, Reel 22.
Mr. Clark, Reel 22, Officers Ward, did you get any indication that the way they were treated, other than medical of course, the way that they were treated was superior in a sense to what the other ranks were getting?
I don't think so, no. Not to my knowledge. When I saw Mr. Thomas, there was no divide between us. You just wounded, let's put it simply, wounded soldiers.
Is there a difference between being attended to by a male nurse and a female nurse, in a psychological sense of the difference?
The
man, the woman that I'm trying to get at.
I don't think so. I mean, the ones I come, they were qualified. They were qualified. There was senior, like a staff nurse, then a sister. You know, there was that organisation.
But the gentleness of dealing with
being treated.
Yeah.
No. I don't think so. Especially down there, they, you know, when they used. I mean, you used to get washed in that there. The sisters, the nurses rather, they were detailed off, I suppose, and they used to carry water and, you know, in a dish and that, and wash your face and your arms and so on. You could call them what, like a bed bath, I suppose.
I'm thinking, really, it's rather difficult, but I'm thinking in terms of what we might call a mothering instinct of the female, as against a male who...
Well,
a slightly different, more masculine approach.
It could have been.
It wasn't marked in your own experience at all.
No. You see, when we were in this hospital here, they were all practically female, apart from doctors. And these natives that were doing the orderly type of thing, but they weren't allowed any to medical care, anything like that. It was just nurses. Canadians, there was these, they must have been there. It was Canadians and they were nursing sisters and staff nurses.
Was it a strict regime in the hospital? Disciplinary-wise, you know?
I would think so.
For example, you as patients weren't... disciplined for possibly not settling into the routine in there?
Well, you see, part of this hospital, it was such a big hospital. There were more or less, as you improved, you went convalescent. Then it was a little bit different. Because I remember this was Ward 6 that I was in. But eventually, I finished up in Ward 36. So that, and of course, there was what they called medical wards, and that was where there was a lot of cases. Some of them had TB, but you weren't allowed in them. They were fenced off more or less.
Isolated.
Yeah, because some of the patients there, they used to sleep out on the verandas. For the fresh air.
How did you find your ability to deal with the normal functions of life, toiletry and so forth?
Oh, well, you had to ask for... They used to bring the... What would you call it? They used to put them round the bed.
The screens?
Screens. They used to bring ask for the screen and the nurse would bring that and... bedpans and bottles and what have you. You hadn't to be afraid to ask for them.
Was it difficult for you to sit up, to keep your balance?
It was, it was. But somehow or other managed. Yeah. But this hospital was a change of... Things were beginning to change now. You couldn't say you were treated better because you'd been treated well in all the other places. But look at the difference of the conditions. Here we were in a brand new hospital. They called it Baragwanath Military Hospital, Imperial Military Hospital. Of course, in there was not just British lads in English. There was, I remember there was a lad in there, an airman from Australia. But you didn't see them all. You see, I was more or less, at this time, you didn't see a lot of them.
Have you any memories of any particular nurse?
Oh, yes.
On your own ward, dealing with you?
Not this particular ward. Not, it was when I was well and went further on.
So what was the treatment now? I mean, how were you progressing, actually?
Well, I was getting to the stage now where I hadn't the splint on anymore. I was still getting the stump was dressed every day. But what was happening was that sooner or later, through conversation somewhere along the line, I was going to have another re-amputation. And what happened was, I was moved to, as you improved in your health-wise, but not the leg-wise, health-wise, I was moved to ward 15, and then there was I think he was an English doctor, this particular man, I don't know his name, and then I was moved from there to ward 36. Now in ward 36 there were amputations, arm amputations, other leg amputations, and other various injuries, and they'd come together in this ward 36, and we had a sister in there. She was not 100%, she was 100% plus. She was a great woman. And they called her Sister Launda. She belonged to Benoni, in suburban Joburg. And she was a great sister. And she had there was one sister to the ward. And there was 36A and 36B. The sister's office was like in between the two wards. She could go from one to the other. And she had these nurses. Some of them were fully trained nurses. Others were, what would you call them, probationer nurses? But they were all very good. They were there and they were doing a good job. But I never forgot her, Sister Launda.
In what ways was she so good?
I think it was more understanding. I'm not sure whether she hadn't been up in the Middle East. I'm not sure. But she was more understanding. You could tell. She had your welfare at heart. She was really good. It's 50-odd year, but I never forgot Sister Launda.
She was more more humane towards, or humanitarian towards you in that sense,
and she
than just a patient. You were a person. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And she treated all the lads the same. Everybody thought a lot about Sister Launda. That's where she belonged, Benoni. And there was a young girl there. Well, there was two particular ones that were nurses in there. One of them, believe it or not, I had a Christmas card from that young girl right until last year. That's the only correspondence we have, a Christmas card, and she lived in Durban. and they called her Nurse Sinclair. But somewhere along the line, every lad in the ward used to call her Paddy. That was the name they gave her. I don't know why, but she was really good. Her name was Sylvia, but we all called her Paddy Sinclair. Our parents or our grandparents that come from Scotland at one time or another. And I still hear from that young girl to this day. Every Christmas. And her son now, I mean, I wouldn't know her. I've never met her anymore. She would be only about 18 or 19 when we were out there. And he is 50 odd years on. If I met her today, I wouldn't know her, because she's a woman turned her 70s. And her son came to this country, he's emigrated, and he's living in Surbiton, Surrey. And he brought his family. And she has been to this to see him, but I've never met her.
Did you get any visits from the civilian people?
Oh, yes. There was a family that really took over the ward. When I say took over, more or less, they used to bring stuff, apples or fruit and all kinds of stuff up for everyone. It used to be put on the table in the middle of the ward, and they were there for all the patients. And they called them Spargo. And they originated, I think, from Cornwall way, down there, Mr. and Mrs. Spargo, and they had three sons. And their mother, Mrs. Spargo's mother, was a Mrs. Simons. I believe she was well off. And they used to bring her up, and they used to go from around every bed and have a talk to the lads. And they used to come sometimes twice a week. Eventually, as time went on, I did go to the home in Joburg.
When you got on your feet, more mobile.
Well, it was mobile.
Did you get any visits from military people coming around, high-ranking people?
Not really. Just the surgeons and, you know, specialists. But I do remember the man that did the reamp.
I'm coming to that, but what happened there? Or how did that come about?
Well, as I got better, I was sent down to Joburg to a limb centre to see the limb specialist. I forget the name of the street, but anyway, this was a proper limb. It was a limb. They used to make the limbs, fit the limbs. And I had to go down. I was sent down there again. It shows how the organisation was working. Even down in a foreign country, I was sent from there after treatment and down to Joburg to see the limb specialist. And he was the man that told me what had happened was the leg was healed almost, but there was about an inch and a half of bone protruding, which wasn't any good to have an artificial leg fitted to it. It had to be healed, and then what had happened, you see, after I was telling you about this skin extension, the muscles had slipped back of your leg and the bone was left protruding about an inch and a half. But it wasn't affecting me. And this specialist said, you'll have to have a reamputation. And that was where I maybe could have come on. I don't know. But anyway, I was told I could have this operation, this reamputation, there in Baragwana.
Rather than come home and have it here?
Yeah. It would save a lot of time. There was all the facilities was there. There was no war going on there.
Was it in your mind also that had you come home to have it here, you'd been obviously lengthening the process, but if you'd had it out there, when you got home, you'd be more, well, ready for civilian life. You wouldn't have had any more problems.
Yes. Anyway, I decided I would have the reamputation in Joburg. And I talked to Sister Londa, and somewhere in the conversation I said, you see, they used to take you back to surgical ward for such a big thing like this. But not necessarily, you know, but that was what was supposed to happen, I think. And I said, do you think if I have this operation, can I go from here, ward 36, and come back here? That was how much faith I must have had in that woman, plus her staff. And she had a staff of a Nurse Dickinson, Paddy Sinclair, and others. Some I can't remember. Those two nurses I can't remember, plus the sister. And something must have been... She must have taken note. And one night, I was called in to her office, and this surgeon was in. He was an army major, South African, and they called him Major Steenkamp. And I thought, you know, your mind said, what's happening now? And that doctor, Major Steenkamp, said he would be doing the operation, the amputation. Not to worry, and he told me different things that would happen. He reassured, he was more or less conditioning you to, you'll be all right. He was going to do this operation.
What was your initial thoughts, response, when you were told by the other doctor, we're going to have to go at you again?
Well, I didn't lose heart or anything like that. I thought, well, this is going to happen. And I've got everything here in my favour to be treated by these people in this hospital.
It didn't knock your spirits down at all?
No, because in the meantime, the lad that used to sleep in the next bed to me, he belonged to Warrington. He'd been an artillery lad, and he used to walk badly. Tall fella, smashing man. And they called him Will Jackson. And he said, he was sitting talking, I was talking to him, and you know what lads talk in conversation, I'll be here when you come back. And he was. And this night when I was talking to this surgeon, Major Steenkamp, because they were in military uniform, he was a South African. I think he may have been an Afrikaans. But anyway, he was going to do the job. And I was prepared the next morning, and that was on the 12th of November, 1942. I was prepared for the operation, the reamputation. And I was prepared in Ward 36. Of course, the doctor used to come and see you beforehand. And then they used to get what they're calling a pre-med, prepare you for to go up. And I was taken up to the operating theatre, put in a ward, well, side room more or less to wait. And there was nursing staff there, and this anaesthetist. South African, and he came in and he said, talk to you a bit, you know, and then he gave you, and after a while, your mouth seemed to dry up, and he kept asking you questions and that, but you could tell you're going under, but that was why he was there. And once that happens, you can't talk. Your speech seems to leave, you know, because your mouth's all dried up. And I remember being taken into this theatre and all the doctors and that around and staff. And it's funny, you never forget these things. And the big lights above you. And then oblivion. And the next thing I can remember was back in Ward 36, back in the own bed, and the nurse and sister and everybody around, you know. And this Will Jackson, was, he was there, this, and he'd been in the artillery. I think he'd had a good job in Warrington in a store of some sort. He was well educated. And he was there, and I can remember coming round. And I don't know how long it was. I must have only been out about a half a day or something. And that sister treated me, and my leg was dressed and everything from that day on. I never left that ward 36. I never went back to another ward. I was in that ward 36 all the time. Of course, you met up with a lot of lads similar. I had a Polish lad next to me, Cyril Kaczorowski. He'd had his an arm and a leg off. And we used to try and teach him a bit of English, and we used to learn, he used to tell us bits of Polish words, you know.
Were you getting mail from your family
this
point?
Yes.
And they would know by now that what your injuries were?
Oh, yes. Well, that doctor had written, you see. Oh, yes, they knew.
Were they obviously very concerned about you?
Well, you could tell in the letters, you know. You could tell, like.
They must have wanted you home as quick as they could get you home.
Oh, yes. But I used to tell them, well, I'm being well looked after you now. Now, at this time, once the leg had healed, you know, after weeks of being looked after, I was able to go out in a wheelchair, and you were take you around the hospital and what have you. You know, it was, as I say, it was a big hospital. But on the 23rd, just before the operation, General Smuts came to the hospital. He said he was there to open the hospital, but he says, looking around, it had already been opened. But he did come, General Smuts. Oh, he was Field Marshal, wasn't he? Eventually, he was a Field Marshal. And he came to Barragwanath Military Hospital.
Did you see him?
Yes.
Did he speak to you?
No, no. He was up on a platform, and all the lads was around, you know, what have you, wheelchairs and what have you. Yes, he did visit that hospital. And even today, that hospital, after the war, was handed over to the black people. And it's a hospital for black people. And even on the television, the most prominent name that's ever mentioned is Soweto. And that's just down the road from Barragwanath. We could stand at Barragwanath and look down at this town, but we didn't know it then. But that was Soweto, where Mandela was, belonged.
Were you getting visits from padre or clergymen?
Oh, well, they were always around, you know. They were always around.
Did religion have any part to play in your own recovery and the way that you dealt with your injury?
Well, it might have done in your mind.
Were you a religious person in that sense?
Just like any other soldier, you know. Whilst I was with the DLI, of course, we had to. Well, I'm saying we had to. We had to parade. But I never missed a church parade. No, no. In all the villages and towns that I was in, even in France and Belgium, we had a padre out there. You could do a route march, and at the end of a route march, you'd have a service. It might only be 5 or 10 minutes, but it was a service. But
so your leg is now repaired, ready for
yes
some kind of mechanical assistance. So.
Mm-hmm. It was, and of course, in the meantime, after the op, used to go up to the YMCA, you know, taking
you were in the wheelchair pretty regularly now, were you?
Wheelchair, yes. It's still at this time. But
were you able to use crutches yet?
I was almost getting to the stage of crutches. In fact, they became part of your body, I think. And once I was on the crutches, every week, I think it was, we had to go along to this colonel. I forget his name now, Lazarus or something like that. But anyway, we had to go along to this colonel into his office. And he examined you to see how things were going. And I always remember he always had a stenographer next to him. And every, you know, talking and asking questions and stuff. But we all had to go along, all amputations. And when we used to go along, we used to all go together, you know, and we used to pass a ward where they were all female, like wounded or sick or what have you. And they always used to be sleeping on verandas and things, used to come to the, but we wired off. And you used to stop and talk to them on the way along, crutches and everything, you know. Sick, lame and lazy. But this colonel used to see us every... And yet, when you went, you had to take your records from the ward. The ward sister used to give you records, x-rays and what have you. So you were always getting x-rays. So we were well looked after from that ward. But I never saw the surgeon anymore that did the operation. And from that, we were well looked after.
And you said you had a YMCA that you could visit.
Yes. And I'll tell you, that YMCA, there used to be an artist used to come on the television, Michael Miles, called Take Your Pick. And he had came from New Zealand, I believe, and he came to this, to South Africa, and he used to come up and put a show on in the YMCA. But then they didn't call it Take Your Pick. They called it Army Forfeits. And the surgical patients used to go one night and medical patients used to go another night because they never mixed the medical with the surgical on account of there was TB. This is only my memory. But we used to go up there and Michael Miles produced that show, which in years later on became in this country, Take Your Pick.
You'd be in that hospital at Christmas of 42, were you?
Yes, I was in that hospital nearly 8 months.
Did you recall what Christmas was like there?
Well, by that time, we were allowed to go out and we used to have to get a pass, get it signed by the people you were going to stay with, and then have it signed by the authorities. And we were allowed to go to these people that used to sort of like visit the ward. And Will Jackson and I spent Christmas Eve at Spargo's down in Kensington, Joburg. And on the New Year's Day, we went to another house.
How did you get down? Was it army transport?
No, we used to catch the bus at the gates. Or if a lot of times there was cars passing, they would stop and give lads a lift if they were going into Joburg.
And
we got one lift.
And you were on crutches, of course.
Yeah, oh yes, I was on crutches by this time.
Were you able to joke about your condition by this
time? Oh, yes.
Your spirits
up and... Aye. It was your toes, you see. You used to feel your toes. And as I say, I was... Altogether, I would be in Joburg about 8 months. But the Christmas was spent down at these two houses. One was in Kensington, Mr. and Mrs. Spargo. And the other was Mr. and Mrs. Mack.
Did you get your artificial limb whilst you were here at this hospital?
Yes, yes. I had to keep going down to get measured, and this specialist, the limb specialist, used to check you up and this, that.
Is there some shrinkage in the leg that you've got to work
for? They used to fasten like a, I think we crepe bandage around the stump of your leg. That's what they used to do.